WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is Noah Baumbach, the writer and director of the new film comedy Mr. Jealousy. It's his second film. His first, Kicking and Screaming, was made right after college, and it was about people just leaving college, trying to figure out what to do with their lives. Mr. Jealousy stars Eric Stoltz as Lester, an aspiring writer who hasn't published yet. He falls in love with Ramona, an art historian played by Annabella Sciorra, but he's obsessively jealous of all of her previous lovers, particularly of Dashiell, a successful writer. Dashiell is played by Chris Eigmann, who we'll meet a little later. Lester is so jealous of Dashiell that he decides to join Dashiell's therapy group under an assumed identity. Lester hopes to find out if Dashiell is still in love with Ramona. Here's a scene in which Lester is probing Ramona about her previous lovers.
In college, it was just Donald, Sandro, Max and Arlo, and Jeff. And then after college, Art, Dashiell, Mikey, Rick, you know.
Whoa, wait a second. Who's Mikey? Some 12-year-old?
Just some guy. I've mentioned him to you, I'm sure.
No, we went through our lovers. You never had a Mikey.
Well, I forgot. Or I left it out accidentally. Maybe we didn't do it. I don't remember. Maybe we just did, like, you know, other stuff. Everything but.
We slept together on the first date.
Uh-huh.
You were awful trusting. I mean, for all you knew, I could have been some maniac.
I used a condom.
Well, that's not what I mean. You could have waited. You could have let me wait.
What?
Why were you so quick to make love to me?
I liked you.
So you hop in the sack with everyone you like?
No. What? Are you using my behavior with you against me?
I'm just saying that I think you moved a little fast with me.
I don't believe you.
I'm just saying.
Are you jealous of yourself?
When the characters played by Eric Stoltz and Annabella Sciorra fall in love, they start to share lists of former lovers. That seems like a very kind of dangerous game, doesn't it?
For them, I think it is. I think it. The narrator in the movie even says, that it's sort of a way for them to flirt was to talk about their past lovers. And I sort of always find that interesting on first dates, sometimes a way to sort of break the ice, in some ways to acknowledge that this is a date. You tend to maybe bring up, you know, ask about, oh, you know, who was your last boyfriend? And then it becomes this sort of odd, courting. And I don't think it's advisable, probably. Certainly not for the character in this movie.
Now, your first two films, Kicking and Screaming and Mr. Jealousy, are about that period of almost limbo after college or at the tail end of college when you're not quite a fully formed adult yet. You don't have like a full life of your own yet, but you're not really a student anymore either. So
right.
it's that in-between period where you don't know exactly what you're going to become. You don't know if you'll be successful at pursuing the thing that you want to pursue, if you're lucky enough to know what it is you want to pursue yet. Why does that particular transitional period interest you? I guess it's in part because of your age. Still being in your 20s, yes?
Right, 28. I'm interested in how sort of friendships or relationships that have developed over a long period of time, when people go through times of sort of individual change. And in Kicking and Screaming, it's a group dynamic, how that group dynamic changes when each of them individually have to sort of move on. Do they end the friendships? How do the friendships change? And that was sort of a big thing that interested me in that movie. With Kicking and Screaming, it was people who had graduated college and they just didn't want life to happen to them. They wanted no experience. They wanted to stay where they were. And with Mr. Jealousy, it's people who now have had some experience, and I think now they're afraid that nothing will happen to them, and they want as much experience as possible, so they create these kind of sort of neurotic adventures for themselves to somehow, you know, I guess inject adventure into their lives.
Did you have friends who almost resented your determination and your early success at actually getting a film made? Because there is this sense of when you're young of, at least, well, you're sticking together. I mean, you're all going through this transition together and you're all lost together. And when somebody starts to break rank and and actually move on to something, it's really unnerving for the people who are still in that transition.
And you get a lot of left-handed compliments, you know, sort of... you know, when did you stop beating your wife? Kind of questions that you have to handle. You know, I was sorry about some of those reviews. You know, things like that.
That's right. I guess things aren't all that good for you after all, are they?
Yeah, it seems like things sort of slowed down for a period. You know,
<That's right.
laughs> with this sort of mock concern. You know? Well, that even sort of informs some of Mr. Jealousy. That kind of I think at different points in my life I felt on either. Chris Eigenman's character Dashiell, or with Eric Stoltz's character Lester. Lester sort of wants to hate Dashiell so much because he's a successful writer.
Dashiell is the ex-boyfriend.
Is the ex-boyfriend
who's a very successful writer, right?
And then sort of discovers in some ways Dashiell turns out to be almost the most sympathetic character in the movie, and so I think certainly that informed some of that. Creating that dynamic between those two guys. But, you know, at the same time, it distinguishes all your friends who really are supportive and sort of rise to the occasion. You know, you sort of realize that it's tough on both sides.
Your parents have both been film critics. Your mother, Georgia Brown, for The Village Voice. Your father, Jonathan Baumbach, before he became a novelist, I think was a film critic for Partisan Review.
Mm-hmm.
So did you see a lot of movies when you were young?
I did see a lot of movies, and a lot of good movies way before I was old enough to appreciate them. My father was a film critic when I was very young, and my mother became a film critic when I was in college. So I think it was good in a way. I didn't really feel ever like I was growing up with critics. I just felt I was growing up with movie lovers. And so it was great. It was great to be able to, you know, at an early age, rebel against foreign films and go out and just see movies with the cast of Saturday Night Live in them, and then come back around and realize that, you know, some of those guys aren't so bad.
So what were some of the touchstone films in your family that you absolutely had to see?
Well, one of my first movies was a Bresson movie called Lancelot du Lac.
Which, one of your first films?
Yeah. All I remember is horses' legs. I'm afraid even to go back and see it because it has such an odd impression in my psyche. Mm-hmm. They would sort of try and find movies like I saw The Wild Child, the Truffaut movie, movies that in some ways could, you know, you could justify children seeing. Later, anything by Jean Renoir or... then sort of Antonioni and Fellini and I mean there's so many. Then I was sort of introduced to all like the Howard Hawks and John Ford movies, and then I was sort of off and running once I started to, you know, see those and enjoy them. But in college it was, I got to sort of find things on my own also, and then come back and say, have you seen this movie? And they'd be like, yeah, of course, we tried to drag you to it. So, you know, they certainly didn't insist I see things. They sort of let me discover things on my own, too, which I think is the best way.
Now, would your parents, when you were young, take you to films that had sex in it, as long as the film was, you know, kind of intellectual and artistic?
They were sort of careful about it, although some tended to sort of to sneak through. I think about halfway through Last Tango in Paris, I was escorted out of the theater.
Before the butter.
Yeah. Exactly, before the butter, thankfully. They didn't have to explain too many things to me afterward. But my father's sort of love of film even got him in trouble because one time, I was even sort of a young teenager. There was a movie called Private School for Girls. And if you couldn't tell from the title, it was directed by a man named Noel Black, who had made a movie called Pretty Poison with Anthony Perkins and Tuesday Well, which is a really, now I've seen it, but my father's like, that's a terrific movie. This guy's, Noel Black's a great director. Let's go see this Private School for Girls. So about 10 minutes into that, we were, you know, in the parking lot, and my father was mumbling softcore pornography under his breath as I was tossed in the back seat.
What were the conversations in your family like after movies? Did you have really good serious talks about films?
Yeah, we would, my father and I also would sort of tend to, like, if movies we liked but thought things could be different, we would tend to go on and on about, like, well, if they had done this with the ending, or if the movie had ended here and not there, or if, you know, it would be great. And there's a lot of sort of, like, trying to, like, figure out our own versions of the movies. And then also later on, directors who maybe sort of made a few really good movies but then made a lot of movies afterwards that were not as good, we would sort of go on all these theories of what happened to, you know, X director. What, you know, could it be this? Could it be that? And of course, later I discovered it just was like a cocaine habit and alimony payments. And but at the time, it was always very interesting because we'd really try and get into, you know, I think he got too interested in, you know, something, you know, whatever. But there was a lot of sort of fun. My whole family, a lot of our sort of reminiscences together are sort of based around seeing movies.
You know, I think for some young filmmakers, if their parents see the film and maybe don't really like it and can't cover up the fact that they don't really like it, the filmmaker could say, well, it's a different generation. What do they know about movies anyways? You couldn't really say that if your parents didn't like your films. So fortunately, they've liked them. I mean, hopefully they've liked them. I don't know what
yes.
they thought of them. Did they like them?
Yeah, they both claim to like them both movies very much.
Did you in a way not want to hear the full review from them and just be protected from that?
Usually, the first time I show it to them, I hope they like it because they're going to end up having to see about 10 other cuts afterward as I try and get their input as, you know, I get closer and closer to the final film. But I tend to involve them even pretty early in the script stage, show it to them and ask their thoughts. And I've also used them in small parts in the movie, so they tend to see some of the filmmaking. And so it's not like I'm showing them something that is you know, completely new to them. But the first time I showed them anything, there's a lot of anxiety about it.
My guest is screenwriter and director Noah Baumbach. His new film is called Mr. Jealousy. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Noah Baumbach. He wrote and directed the new film, Mr. Jealousy. His first film, Kicking and Screaming, was about a group of 20-something college graduates hanging around their college town, unsure of what they should do with their lives. One of the characters, Chet, played by Eric Stoltz, has dealt with the issue by staying in college, remaining a perpetual student. He also works as a bartender, and in this scene, he's serving his friend Grover, played by Josh Hamilton. Grover can't figure Chet out.
Do you plan to leave here, ever?
Why would I leave?
I don't know.
You know, I sold term papers to make a living, and slept with undergraduates, the whole deal. After my seventh or eighth year, I began to feel like I was using myself. Somehow I experienced my time as a postponement of my life, but eventually I just realized that this is my life.
I can see getting used to it.
I met a woman, my third American history of the 20th century professor. We had this child.
Nice.
It is nice. It's nice. But it's not for everyone. Some people need to have a real career, which is something that I've never really understood. You know, why someone would want to be a vet or a lawyer or a filmmaker. I'm paraphrasing myself here, but I am a student. And that's what I chose. You might need to choose something else, and that's...
When you made Kicking and Screaming right after college, did you have any movie experience? In other words, did you have any idea what you were doing, or did you have to fake your way through the first film?
There's plenty of faking. I had never actually been on a movie set before I made Kicking and Screaming, which I blurted out at the New York Film Festival to my cast and was on the panel with me all just sort of turned around and looked at me, you know, like, we're going to kill you. I don't even mean to say that cavalierly. I just was so sure in my head that I wanted to make movies and that I knew what I would do if had I got the chance, that it never even really occurred to me. Because, I mean, my feeling was like, why do I want to be on someone else's movie set? I just want to be on my own.
How did you get money that first time around?
Oh, boy, it was a really long, I mean, everything happened relatively fast for me, but it was the financing fell through twice. The way I ended up actually getting the money was writing the part that Eric Stoltz plays in Kicking and Screaming. I ended up writing in a weekend to get him into the movie to justify the financing. So that was a big movie-making lesson right then and there.
Well, particularly a few years ago when you made Kicking and Screaming, Eric Stoltz was the king of independent films. You almost weren't legally allowed to make one without him in it. But
right,
but you were totally untested, so why did he agree to be in your independent film?
He had read the script and liked it a lot, but was too old to play someone who just graduated college. And I didn't really have anything for him. He was going to play a cameo as a video store clerk. But then when the company that financed the film said, you know, well, we were arguing over other casting choices, and they said, well, looks like we can't finance the film, but if we could use Eric's name to market it, we'll give you the money. And I knew Eric wouldn't agree. He was doing like a, you know, minute and a half cameo, that he wouldn't agree to let us use his name, and it would have been silly to try. So he was in Scotland doing Rob Roy at the time, and the producer and I wrote him a letter, and I just made up the part as we were writing the letter and faxed it to him, saying, this guy's been in college for 10 years, he's still writing his thesis, and it was just insane. So I didn't even know what I was doing. And he agreed within 24 hours to play a part that hadn't been written, and that ended up getting the movie made. And it was one of those things, too, that I wrote it so I knew I could cut it out if I didn't like it, and it ended up making the movie better. So it's just one of it was a good lesson to learn, because I think before I'd made a movie, I really felt like every little thing I did was sort of part of the process, and, you know, the script is perfect, and each move I've made with this money person or this producer is all a step in one direction, and then you sort of realize that none of that means anything. It all comes down to, you know, what gets the money right in that moment.
When you started directing, how did you learn to figure out when a take was actually going to look good on film? Because, you know, you were unused to comparing what a scene looked like with the naked eye and what it looked like when it was processed on film.
Yeah, it's a good question. I remember the first time I saw dailies. I mean, I really was shocked. I couldn't even, like, think about takes. I was just like, wow, it's in color and focus. And that's what we did. I was there. It really was pretty it was really strange. I mean, I think it is something you learn and just sort of get used to is getting an idea. I mean, I do look through the camera as much as I can, certainly when I set up the shot, and then watch on the monitor. And you know, it just becomes a kind of feeling.
Now, you have another movie coming out called Highball. Is that the title?
Highball, yeah.
And it was made with some of the same cast members as Mr. Jealousy, and it was made right after Mr. Jealousy wrapped. Tell something about the film and why you did it so right on the heels of Mr. Jealousy.
Well, it was sort of a bit of an experiment. My feeling always is that it's easier to keep shooting once you're shooting than it is to stop shooting and then start up again. So I wanted to make a movie, in some ways, like the first movie I never made, like something that I always imagined I would have made Kicking and Screaming for, you know, just a, you know, $100,000 with all my friends and in someone's garage. But I was lucky enough to get a little more money for it. So this was a movie, we shot it for about $200,000. And I used the same cast, some of the same crew. And it was one location, and it was three parties over a year, a birthday party, Halloween party, and New Year's party. And I wanted to make a movie that was just all funny, with no pathos. Nobody learned anything, just a movie with a lot of idiots. And so that's what it was. And I'm really happy with it. It was, you know, a real specific thing to try and make a movie in 6 days that worked.
Now, in a moment, we're going to meet Chris Eigmann, who is one of the stars of Mr. Jealousy. And in Mr. Jealousy, he plays an ex-boyfriend of the Annabella Sciorra character, and Eric Stoltz is very jealous of him. He's a successful writer, and Eric Stoltz is not only jealous of him because he is a former boyfriend of Stoltz's girlfriend, but he's also jealous of him because he's successful. Did you write this role for Chris Eigmann?
When I'm writing parts, I generally don't think of actors that specifically, because I don't want to sort of, when I'm writing, I like to sort of keep it free and just think of the characters. But I basically, in the back of my head, knew I was going to give it to Chris. I had really valued working with him on Kicking and Screaming and wanted to work with him right away again. So it's also a part it's where you expect to not like the guy. You expect to hate him. And I wanted to play on certain expectations that you have with, I think, a Chris Eigmann character, because he often plays somebody who's maybe a little prickly, and that to start off with those expectations about his character and then in the second half of the movie sort of change that around completely.
Well, Noah Baumbach, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Noah Baumbach wrote and directed the new film, Mr. Jealousy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.